Attention Retronauts listeners, if you'd like to meet us in person, and of course you would, we'll be doing a panel at this year's Portland Retro Gaming Expo in beautiful Portland, Oregon. On Sunday, October 23rd, we'll be holding the Retronauts 10th anniversary panel at 3 o'clock p.m. in Auditorium B, and of course you will need to be an attendee of the Portland Retro Gaming Expo to attend. But it doesn't stop there. Later that night, from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock p.m., we'll be holding a private Retronauts event at Quarterworld, located at 4811 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. Attendance will be free, not counting Quarterworld's cover charge, but to get in, you must print out a ticket from the event's Eventbrite page and bring it along with you. To find the Eventbrite page, head on over to Retronauts.com or our Facebook page at facebook.com/Retronauts. It'll be pinned to the top until the day of the event. We hope to see you there, and remember, you must ask before touching us because we are very sensitive boys. Remember, that's Sunday, October 23rd in Portland. Be there,
or not be there.
Hello everybody, this is your pal Bob Mackey, the host for this episode of Retronauts Micro, and I'm just here to give you a tiny intro to explain this episode. This episode is actually a two-parter, the second part of a two-parter rather, and if you want to hear the first part, if you somehow missed it, that's Retronauts Micro episode 46. It's called the 8-Bit Superhero Sampler Part 1, and funnily enough, this is the 8-Bit Superhero Sampler Part 2. Last time we talked about two pretty bad superhero games, and this time we're going to be talking about two games that are, okay, so one isn't that great, but it's still very memorable, and the other one is actually a very good game. So this time around, we have, once again, we have Chris Baker from Gazillion, formerly of Marvel, and of course, Chris Antista of LaserTime, and Henry Gilbert of Fandom. And we're going to just jump right into this conversation where we left off, and I hope you enjoy the show. So we're going to talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles next. It's a classic game that we all, I believe, people of our generation all tolerated this game. It has its few bright spots. It was made in 1989 by Ultra Games, wink wink, actually Konami, kind of sneaking in under that only so many games a year policy that Nintendo had. I don't know how they did this. Nintendo had to know. But in any case, this game was developed sort of alongside the cartoon. In Chris's book, it was like he clips out a Nintendo Power preview and it's like, oh, there's going to be a cartoon too with this game. Isn't that fun, kids? But the cover of this game is the comic book cover, them, and they all have red bandanas, which is off model for the cartoon. That always like astounded
and
me
for the game.
Yes,
the
exactly.
But I think the story goes that it, I mean, nothing had been approved, but the box art was approved before the game was being made.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
That totally happens in licensing cases like this.
And there's been some sort of like suspicions that this was another game before
it was a
Turtles game, but nothing has been confirmed. I mean, there are foot soldiers, there's Rocksteady and Bebop, there's Shredder, but a lot of enemies are just like
leg soldiers and clay people. Like,
and
that
Jason
has no purpose in Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, there's almost nothing aside from foot soldiers and Rocksteady and Bebop and Shredder.
Yeah,
that has anything to do. Yeah, Mousers, true.
But it was a painful game. Like, as a kid, but I love the Turtles so much. I wanted to figure out how to beat it. I was like, I have to. I can't give up on this.
Yeah.
All right, I got more pizza. I can make it. Like, this is why, to me, it wasn't a launch game, but it was close to it. The Game Boy Ninja Turtles game, I play that way more because that was beatable.
It's a pretty easy game, but it's a fun game too.
Yeah.
This game, though, I don't want to. This should not be my get good comment, but I always assume like, oh yeah, the damn level. That's where everyone gives up. But I played it for 1UP when I was employed there and when it still existed on a live stream, and I was like, I actually finished the damn level. And I'm like, oh, the damn level. You can memorize it, but level 3 is when everything gets thrown at you at once, and it's just like, what do I do now? Where do I go? Things are running me over on the world map.
I actually had my mind blown during Awesome Games Done Quick, because the damn level obviously gave us all trouble.
You
can play as any four turtles at any time, but like they have consistent health, and if one of them loses all their health, that turtle's just gone until you can find one of those rescue spots.
That's right.
And
yeah, so they're like, tied up and you gotta fight a mini boss.
And I watched a guy in Awesome Games Done Quick, he's like, yeah, I can do this in 5 seconds. How? Just take damage. That's it. Like that. And he just hauls. He doesn't wait for the timing of the lasers. He just doesn't care about seaweed and just goes through it in like 4 seconds, and it looks easy as hell.
So the pro tip is don't be careful.
Yeah, do not. But that's the thing. You're very careful because you don't want to lose a turtle for the rest of the game.
And the hitboxes on the seaweed are really weird. Like, it's never really clear. Like, am I touching? Oh, I am touching it. I'm losing life.
So, I feel like that's kind of the most infamous part of the game.
It's a shared, like, traumatic memory I think we all have.
Well, for me, it's not, though. I remember it being challenging, but the really hard part was near the end where you're in the Technodrome, and there's all these, like, spacemen guys with these guns that are shooting at you that take off a ton of health. And the only way... I did beat the game several times, and the way you do it is there's a place where the scroll weapon is, which is the most powerful weapon in the game. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of grind, leaving the room, coming back, getting 20 of them, leaving the room, coming back, or however many it was, until you had 99 scrolls. And then then you use that against the Technodrome and used it against the space guys.
That's right. You literally fight the Technodrome. Yeah. And the scale is way off.
It is. It is. That's actually what I should have pointed out in my book.
You pointed out how the Superman goes up to the Statue of Liberty's knees almost in that little picture of him, the little like intro.
The Technodrome is about 12 feet high.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also unbalanced because thanks to them being correct with their weapons, because a Psi doesn't go as far as a bow staff.
Yes. Donatello, I love fighting bosses just standing on a platform above them and just plunging it downwards.
See, that's the thing. I attribute Donatello being my favorite turtle to this game.
Me too.
Yeah, same here.
Even though I like Raph the best, he always had the worst weapon.
He's arguably the coolest, but he's the one you least want to play as in this game, and it's all we had.
Especially in this game, because he just like spins a salad fork in his hand directly in front of him, and that's it. Like,
he does look like a sad gunslinger.
Yeah.
That's true. It's not even cool. At least it should look cool, even if it has poor reach.
It has one of the worst life low sounds.
Oh, ever. That it's like almost the worst.
Oh, yeah.
It's excruciating.
Worse than Zelda, I think.
And I will say, like, I put on the overworld music to help motivate me.
Oh yeah.
It puts a pep in your step. Dun 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 dun.
Yes.
For as uneven as this game is, this would begin a legacy of great of Turtles games, but they always had great music, and the music in this game is fantastic. It's embedded in my brain for life. Not just the overworld theme, but like almost every theme. Even the monotonous underwater theme. I feel like this is the first example of Konami really working the da 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 into almost every song, you know, and trying to make it work.
I did like it a lot with the song written by the creator of Big Bang Theory and Two and a Half Men. No, Two and a Half Men, Chuck Lorre, he wrote that song. As was reminded by, if anybody else watched Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt season 2, that's a joke in there that he wrote that song.
Oh, really? Okay, I didn't see that.
But also speaking of songs that I like about this is that Dorkly, the guys Dorkly, they did a video about this game set to the original theme of just like, it was like Turtles for Nintendo, fucking awful. Donatello's cheap, Leonardo's pretty keen. Like, Splinter's a radical rat. He sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a great video.
God.
And it ends with, what a bad game. Next one's better. And it just has a clip to the TMNT arcade.
I'm just thinking of the great music and the great cinematics. Like when you turn on the game and you just hear like the drum beat and then like the little twinkling sound and then it like the picture of the turtles pop up.
Yeah,
it's really cool. Yeah. Trying to think what else. Like Chris, this game has a kind of like non-canonical storyline. What are the turtles trying to do in this game?
As I recall, they are trying to get a gun that will turn them back to life. You know, I should have reread my own book here.
They're trying to get a gun from Splinter that will turn Splinter back into a gun from Shredder. Yeah, that will turn Splinter back into a human.
Exactly, which has never happened as far as I can tell.
Interpretation.
We resent who we are.
I've only watched the cartoon, but I had the impression that it only like mutation only works one way. And Splinter. I'm a rat, sir.
You're welcome,
Smithers
sir.
Was a human. Oh my God, Splinter was a human, and he's a rat now because he was in the puddle of whatever with the rat, and I don't think it goes the other way.
I get confused about the origins all the time because it's different in the show, the movie, the comic, and the new Michael Bay movies, and the new comic, which is, by the way, really good.
It's great.
Yeah, I mean, I think the cartoon origins is just from the cartoon. Mm. I think Splinter is just a rat. We just recorded Talking Simpsons. I'm sorry.
Talk about Black Splinter.
I like it better when Splinter is a rat that grew human size instead of a human turned into a rat.
Radical.
Like, because he was just like a dude in a cage who was owned by an actual master. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's how he learns. Like, I prefer that.
Oh, baby. That's the voice of Elmo, by the way. I love pointing that out.
It is really
Kevin. That is Elmo. Kevin Clash.
And Baby from Dinosaurs.
Yeah. Gotta
and
love him.
One cool thing about this I noticed just by reading the book and looking at videos is that Shredder communicates through the TV just like Mama Fratelli does in Goonies 2, also made by Konami. So there's a Konami through line in which the villain communicates through a TV they somehow pirate.
Or that Macho Man does in Final Fight.
Oh, really? Okay. Oh, right. That is Macho Man, yeah.
I think he does it in later games, too. As I recall, the Tournament Fighters game, he does that as well. Like,
it's a good way to establish a premise. The Turtles are just watching TV, and then Shredder comes on the screen. It's like, I've done this now.
A former coworker of mine, Hollander Cooper, he made the good observation that it kind of works like the second Legend of Zelda game as well too. And when you're in the turtle van, and then in its top down, and you're going around, and then you stop somewhere, and then get out, and then do a 2D exploration.
Mm. Yeah,
it's a very in that way it's similar to Adventure of Link.
It postdates Zelda 2 by about 2 years, so I can see influence being there. Like, there's not a lot of RPG stuff. I guess pizza is like your hit points. Mm-hmm. I love the Splinter. Advice. He gives advice and then says you can do it. Like after every line of advice, I think even April O'Neil says that too.
My favorite thing I just learned about the game: there are several really frustrating parts involving jumping.
Yes, there's one really infamous jump in this game. Yeah.
And when that was ported over to the PC, they didn't finish it. So the PC version is absolutely unfinishable. You cannot get past that horrible jump because the dimensions are different, and they didn't bother. No one played it before they released it.
Yes, I mean, that was kind of common for PC ports of NES games were just the worst unplayable messes. Like, no one cared. They just wanted to bank on the name and everything like
dirty
that.
Dirty Americans. U.S. Gold.
The Mega Man ports are especially bad. And I did want to mention that none of these games we're going to be talking about, I believe, have been on Virtual Console, but this one was briefly. You had to pay $1 more, like six instead of five.
Oh, yeah,
It was taken down when everything else Ninja Turtles was taken down, along with the reshelled game, and I think even the arcade game was taken down from Xbox Live. So there was a point where I guess a rights transferred or a deal expired, and these
perhaps
games
Ubisoft had a deal with Konami.
They did. I think I can only speculate that was a marketing move for the new Ninja Turtles movie
in 2007.
So
right?
We actually streamed it recently because I have to hold on to that TMNT arcade perfect port on my 360.
Right.
But it's Konami and Ubisoft. But I don't imagine Konami did anything in making that port happen. Ubisoft paid for it to happen.
Right.
I could see Konami. Konami's been going through a lot of stuff lately.
It happened with their Simpsons game. Yeah. And
I could see them just saying, it's too much hassle. Stop listing it.
But there will be a Turtles NES pachinko machine at some point. We can all play if we go to Japan. So yes, this game was available for 1 point, but not anymore. Move on to our next game, which is I think the best game on this list, but also probably the most inaccurate game, and that is Batman 1990 Sunsoft. Sunsoft was kind of an uneven developer. They always had really good music, but I think this is one of their best NES games for their short life on this planet. Chris, I'll let you lead with this. What is wrong with Batman for the NES? And some of the things that are wrong are things that I like, but I want to hear what you...
I'm not saying I dislike any of this stuff I'm going to mention.
Your book is wonderfully, perfectly nitpicky.
Yes, exactly. So I want to start by saying I like Purple Batman. Okay. So sue me, but please continue.
Well, I like Purple Batman purely as a nostalgia level, and back then it was like he's just purple. Whatever,
just like
I don't care.
I love neon blue Jason from Friday the 13th.
Yes. I want to buy all those NECA figures.
Exactly.
Really,
they are both NECA figures. I do own the Purple Batman. I almost called the book Purple Batman, but I didn't really want to get in any trademark issues or anything.
But I think that was a very clever game design move. Like, we want every level to take place at night, but we can't have a black character against a black background, so how do we fix this? So that, I think that was their solution.
We have 50 colors. Let's see what we can do.
Well, there is a mod that has a black Batman that still works. It works. You can play as it, but at the same time, why not just make him blue and gray like he was in the comics at the time?
That's true, yeah.
But that Burton movie ruined the look of Batman for a long time.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's never really been blue and gray since.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, this is ostensibly based on the Burton movie, but, I mean, Joker is the last thing you fight, but not, I mean, like, this has nothing to do with the movie, correct?
Oh, it has a lot to do with
it. Oh, really?
I mean, okay. It is a movie game.
Because I know Batman Returns, like, kind of follows the movie beat by beat in its own way, but this movie seemed kind of unrelated. I mean, can you explain how it's based on the movie?
Well, the action is very much unrelated.
But the box art is very Tim Burton-y.
Does he fight, like, a different Batman comic boss in every level? Like,
technically.
In their own way. Please explain this. I want to know, like, where these guys come from.
Well, in a way, every character you punch in the entire game is a Batman character. But very, 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 very loosely interpreted as such.
Yeah,
because at this point in the Burton universe, there's Batman, the Joker, and of course Jack, everyone's favorite Batman character.
I love Jack.
Jack is the best.
What about Bob?
Bob. Sorry, that's what I was thinking.
Okay, Bob.
But
Bob.
You do fight the Joker at the end of the game. Mm. That is the only time when he is not green. Mm. He has like a green tint to his face throughout the entire game. Mm. But when you do get there, he's like 8 feet tall and can summon lightning.
He's like Dracula.
So
yes.
Arkham didn't do it first.
He was more of a Todd McFarlane creation in Arkham when you find
exactly.
him. He's roided out.
But then there are boss characters like Firebug, Killer Moth, a couple other ones. But they're nothing like they are in the comics.
Yeah, your book shows their sprite next to their actual comic portrayal, and it's like, well, I guess this is very loosely
Not
adapted.
Only that, there's also like concept art that they put in the manual that also looks absolutely nothing like the source material. Electrocutioner is one. If you played Batman Origins, you remember he was kind of the joke character.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
Yeah,
Before... Right when Arkham Origins was coming out, a coworker of mine, you know, had the early review copy of it, and he asked me, like, what is the deal with the Electrocutioner? I was like, oh, he's pretty much like a D-level Batman villain. I'm shocked they give him such a high level of importance in the game and all this promotional stuff. And then my friend just said, like, no, I beat him in 1 second. He's a joke in the game, too. I was like, oh, okay, great. Because that is the Electrocutioner. Like, he is a total joke.
So in this game, I mean, Batman punches, but all of his special weapons are sorts of like guns and special weapons like that. Is that correct?
He does have a gun.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean,
quite a lot.
Unlike the Game Boy game, however, you can technically play through the game without firing a gun.
That's really good.
So,
but he does kill people in the Burton movies. That's correct, right?
Yes,
I mean, he throws people on the buildings, and I mean, he explodes them in sewers with their own weapons, but never he never just shoots.
They refuse
in the face.
To tell their friends about it.
He's got like a gun in this game that like spreads, kind of like the Contra gun a little bit.
Oh yeah. I mean, I guess we can talk about this too. We'll go back to Batman at 1990, but Return of the Joker is basically like just like a platformer slash shoot 'em up where you're always totally. Shooting in front of you with the most gorgeous, huge Batman sprite I've ever seen.
It's one of the best looking NES games.
I don't know how Sunsoft did that on the NES. It's just fantastic. It looks great. It sounds great.
I both love and hate the cover to that game.
Is it just like the long Joker face?
Yeah, it is a comic panel of the Joker.
Which artist is that, Henry?
Lantern. Well, it's definitely taken... it's Jim Aporo's style, or Aporo. It's his style because he... had one of the most lantern-jawed Jokers of all time. Like it became to the point of, like, you have a disability.
Like, he's like the Rocky Dennis character.
Yeah, he's basically Rocky Dennis. But that, Jim Aporo did that. He was the Batman artist of the late 80s. So I think it at least took inspiration from that, if not the direct art. But it was like, it's a Batman game that Batman's not even on the cover of. Like, you want to sell kids Batman, but you just have the Joker's head.
I agree with you, but that cover is so eye-catching from a shelf. Just like the Joker, like, blasting out at you, like, leering at you.
It was after, like, Nintendo had like, let go of certain box art restrictions, so it's just, like, a stark yellow... with, like, not a lot of Nintendo notation other than the seal.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I remember that cover better than I remember the original Batman one that I played way more.
It's just like the Batman logo, and then in a crappy font as the official video game.
It's the movie Batman logo, which, if you were alive in 1989 was on my shoe. Everything,
I was counting the days for this game, and it kept getting delayed. You know, it was an 89 movie. It came out in 1990.
That's right. Was the logo redesigned for this movie? Because the logo itself was like merchandise. Like, I just had a Batman logo t-shirt. I didn't know what Batman was. That's cool. That logo is neat.
I think there was some slight touches to it.
I think there had been yellow in the Batman logo before, but not for a while.
The situation with the Batman logo was that originally Batman had no yellow oval around it, and it was just the bat symbol on it. And if you know about the differences between Silver Age and Golden Age DC comics, in most cases, if they weren't Superman or Batman, they were replaced with a different model. Like if it was a new Green Lantern, a new Flash, a new Hawkman, all these types of guys. But if they were... but if they were Batman or Superman, there was no clear demarcation point of when it was Silver Age Superman or when it was Golden Age Superman. But with Batman, when Julie Schwartz took over as the editor-in-chief of the Batman books, he gave him a yellow oval around his chest to say, these are the issues that are now Silver Age Batman. Once he has that oval on his chest and we change the design. And the old wives' tale was that they put this oval around it because it was easier to trademark, apparently. That's the old wives' tale. But
okay,
they changed it around. There were always like slight updates to it. There's this great video you'll see somebody share on Facebook every once in a while. It just shows you how the Batman logo has, subtly changed over the years. And that's one of those ones where the oval logo of Tim Burton's Batman was a very specific one.
It's my favorite.
So one thing I did want to mention is this spawned a Nintendo Power cover, which is one of the only video games magazines I can think of that had Jack Nicholson on the cover. And I have to go back and do research. I'll write about this when I post the episode. But in Nintendo Power issue 50, they did a lot of confessional stuff, like, oh, that Total Recall thing. Arnold Schwarzenegger appeared for like a minute to meet the guest winner, and that was it. But they wrote about how there was some issue with this cover. Either Jack Nicholson thought they made him look fat, or they didn't get the right likeness rights or something. There was some sort of legal issue with using Jack Nicholson on the cover. But they printed it, and it's one of the more memorable Nintendo Power covers. I mean, we have the white Ryu Hayabusa with blue eyes, you know, the white guy in the ninja costume. But this one was like Jack Nicholson, like laughing, and like Batman in the background. It was really, really catching.
Well,
I think
you remember it's not an urban legend. It was Jack Nicholson was a very powerful star and agreed to do that with a sizable back end deal, probably the only one of its type.
Yes, but I think a lot of it was because they put him in excruciating pain to wear like the Joker prosthetics.
He was too good for that movie at the time. Yeah. For real.
Batman was considered like a joke.
Yeah. Nothing was expected of this film. It was one man's dream. And I forget that guy, but he's produced every Batman movie up until including Batman versus Superman. Jack Nicholson was convinced, cajoled into doing this with a really, really, I think someone said he made upwards of $100 million on the role.
He was given points on
He was given points in the movie and every piece of merchandise. So if you put him on something, he's A, owed money, B, has some approval.
So if you bought the Batman video game, Jack Nicholson got a dollar.
Yeah, because it's not necessarily the Michael Keaton Batman on the cover, but that's very Jack Nicholson.
Oh, yeah. And, like, I don't know if Michael Keaton's likeness is in this game, but I know Jack Nicholson's is. Do you remember that at all, Chris?
Of Batman, so you know, can get away with calling that a likeness.
He's kind of got the Keaton dimple on his chin, though. And the game ends with him punching Joker off of the roof of the clock tower and killing.
Yes.
Like, it's very clear he kills him. It's not the very like safe and tidy. Oh, he fell. Batman didn't murder anyone. Type ending. Like,
it's like,
but
you're Joker. I'm gonna kill you. You're dead.
That has bugged me. Because that movie, like, definitively killed the Joker in the first movie. And every superhero movie after that murders. The villain is murdered in the most uncomic way ever to virtually ensure he's not coming back.
It was a big change in Batman Forever when the Riddler wasn't dead.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't kill him at the end of that.
Yeah. One funny thing about the movie itself is that I watched it like a decade ago for the first time in maybe 20 years. It's crazy. Batman is introduced as a piece of animation, number one. And the Joker is killed as a piece of animation, I'm pretty sure. I know Batman is introduced as like a cartoon, like floating across the sky, like literally drawn. Mm. So it's a very Tim Burton-y kind of thing, like playing with different mediums.
When Batman gets his ass kicked a lot of times, you remember the bit where he's like, "Oh, I've got to defend Vicky In this alley, and then the dudes just like fucking shoot him, and he's down, and they almost take his mask off. Like he, like Batman, kind of sucks in that
and
movie.
The finale of the movie is kind of like a video game. He's like going up a clock tower, fighting enemies until he gets to the literal boss at the top. I mean, it is such like a video game thing.
And it's funny they put all that work into him not explicitly killing the Joker at the end of the movie. Though he just throws that guy over the banister from the same height. Like, he definitely kills that guy.
Batman's murderer.
Though in 1989, or before the film came out in 89, within Warner, like, it was one they weren't sure. They're like, wait, no, everybody thinks Batman is Adam West. Like, can we make a dark Batman film? And there's, you can find it on YouTube, the video they made while, they made a film internally while making the movie where Tim Burton was like, guys, please trust us. A dark Batman can work. We read these comics from the last few years. Like, Frank people want to see it. It can be serious. We don't have to make a silly Batman film.
Yeah, I mean, Batman 66 was, is it the name of the series?
That's what it's
referred to. The brand now that DC owns it,
like,
again.
Batman, the name is Batman.
Batman, the TV show, was basically like what the 90s are for us now in terms of time span. Yeah. Like, it was only 20 years ago, but still, that was kind of the definitive Batman for an entire generation.
I love pointing that out, that Batman Adam West show ran for 2 or 3 seasons, hundreds of episodes.
I only watched for the Hogan's Heroes
cameos. It was on multiple times a week, and then went on to define Batman for 20 years to almost everybody who wasn't reading comics. Yeah. That's what everybody thought Batman was.
When I was a kid, that was the first Batman I saw.
Yeah, me too. I watched it every day. Yeah. I loved it.
So yeah, that's why our generation was the one in the early 90s of the toughening up of Batman. Like, beginning with 89, into Batman Returns, and then premiering at the same year, Batman the Animated Series.
Mm-hmm.
That was, from then on, he was the Dark Knight to us. Though then, you know, Schumacher tried to bring back the camp to Batman, and it...
Animated series is my definitive Batman. And I do want to do an entire Batman episode because I love that SNES game.
We discovered it and just streamed it. The Sega CD version of Batman and Robin.
That's astounding. It has the best animation.
It has new animation.
But in the Sega CD codec.
Yeah, but it's more fluid. It's better than the show, but it has like all anime. The voice actors in it. There's like a lost episode of the show on the Sega CD wrapped in a horrible driving game. You do not see Batman in the game.
God, that driving game, yeah. And I believe there was a Genesis Batman based on the movie, but not in America because Nintendo had the exclusive rights to a Batman game. So like Europe and Japan got that Batman game for the Genesis, but we didn't. So they had their own Batman game. I don't know if it was made by Sunsoft.
We eventually got
Batman. Got it? Okay,
yeah, did
they really?
Was it interesting thing about that?
Ooh, I was wrong. I'm sorry.
It definitely came out here. It was a little bit later. It might have been 91.
It felt much, much later than the movie.
Yeah, but I didn't buy it as a kid because I looked on the back. And it had screenshots from the NES game, which is totally different.
Really? Oh, man. They screwed that up.
Yes, it is a huge screw-up. And you play the Genesis game, and it is a very literal adaptation of the movie.
Okay, yeah.
It is, you know, you go, like, through that museum, and, you know,
fight Robert Wool.
Arliss himself.
I was really reaching for the Arliss joke in my head too. We're all Arliss out.
Actually, can I go back to the very, 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 very loose interpretations
please
of
do.
Characters? So I talked a little bit about the bosses like Fire, Bug, Killer Moth, Electrocutioner. They're all very loose interpretations, but in a very like alternate universe kind of way, you could probably get away with saying that's who they are. But it's very obvious to me that the developers of the game here, or whoever wrote the manual at least, had a copy of the Who's Who in the DC Universe.
And that's all they had.
And for the actual like regular enemies you fight throughout the game, they named them after actual DC characters.
Really? What's that little thing that runs back and forth along the ground?
That I don't know.
Okay.
There's
a lot of those.
About.
Yeah,
right.
The spikes
a little spiky robot Roomba kind of thing.
So Runaway from Tom Selleck.
But like, for example, did you know that Deadshot, Will Smith himself, was in this game?
What?
No, every way. the guy, the just the generic guy who shoots you with a gun is supposedly Deadshot. Sometimes there are multiple ones on screen.
Whoa.
So it was like, it was one of Sunsoft USA's three employees, like kind of squinting, like, you could be this guy.
The exact same sprite without the gun runs at you throughout the game, and that is Maxi Zeus.
Wow.
Maxi Zeus, if you're not familiar with this character, he's fairly obscure, but he was in the animated series for an episode or two. Mm-hmm. He basically thinks he's a Greek god.
He's a rich guy who goes crazy and then like thinks he's Zeus.
There's he's more or less a mobster, and he's not going to go running at you just to hurt you.
So there's some sort of like cloning subplot they'd never finish, because why are there 15 Deadshots fighting me?
Yeah, like all the guys who are squatting and shooting you with the flamethrower. That's Heatwave from The Flash.
Wow.
There's another character called Enforcer, which I'm not really that familiar with, who's in there. The KG Beast.
Whoa.
Very clever.
Is a character who appears once in the game. It's in the very first level, and you either beat him up right away, or he's going to take out at least half your health.
Oh, really?
But he's basically a cyber ninja. Mm-hmm. Here, I can show you guys who are
now,
here.
KG Beast is great. He's such a 90s or late 80s type dude.
No, yes, KG Beast?
Exactly.
Well, I mean, he's got like the spawn mask. He has all the things of an early 90s cliche of like, he has the spawn type mask, tons of red, and then like a thing on his forearm, like as he's cybernetically enhanced. Yeah, the KG Beast thing makes him like more related to communism. But, yeah.
Oh boy, I mean, so this game, any more like standout?
There's other characters that I had never heard of before doing the research of this game, like Night Slayer, who apparently is a very agile character, but in this he's like a 1950s robot with Wolverine claws.
Wow.
Yeah, and then Shakedown. I think his whole thing is just being a bad guy later, who's green, and then I don't know what he does, but he doesn't look anything like this.
When you think of those characters too, like when you think of it, how they make games today, like each of them is a license in some cases, you know, and so to use them for nobody characters, like that is making them much more expensive than just having, you know, like a final fight just repeated the same dude but in a different color.
Yeah, it's such a different world. Like Warner doesn't even like license its Batman out anymore, really. It's like Warner makes Batman games.
Yeah.
Themselves.
Yeah, pretty much since Arkham. Yeah, I don't know who did it before that, but I mean, I assume it was
EA. Well, I mean, Warner wasn't into publishing the first Arkham. It was Square Enix who published it the first time.
You're right.
Then after it was such a success, then Warner was like, okay, we'll do this. Now Warner Interactive is in full swing. Like, they make the DC games.
Right.
And they'll license out stuff to, you know, for mobile or maybe like a kid's game. But
in the MOBA.
But I mean, they even have Warner is DC, or Warner is Lego games too. So all those DC Lego games, that's also them.
It's a very strange time for all licensed characters, where people are like, well, we have beach towels and action figures. I guess we should have a video game. We'll
Why not?
Whatever you want.
This
check
Japanese
it all.
Guy can make it for
we
us.
We won't cross-check any of this.
Yeah. I mean,
games are for geeks anyway, so who cares?
This will be on sale for 10 months, right? Who cares?
Yeah. It was probably considered the same as like a board game.
Yeah.
You know, just we'll make
the
video game too. Yeah.
Discovering with that Disney research is like, that's how long's the contract at last. Contracts for games tended to last as long as an action figure would be on the shelf, which isn't long. It's like maybe a year, and
you
no
sell
one cared
it
about
it
after
Christmas, and then it's gone.
And they didn't expect dorks in their 30s would be talking about them on a Thursday night.
What do you know? I mean, I think we glossed over it. We're going on a long time about Batman, but it's a very good game.
It is.
If the Arkham games never existed, this is the best Batman game.
Yeah, like, the music is great. It's fantastic music. Some of the best on the NES. The graphics look really good.
I should say Laser Time Sister Podcast, VG Empire, did 2 episodes about Batman music. Yep. You should look them up. VG Empire. Look it up, guys.
Like Ninja Turtles, Batman had a lot of great music, and Konami would take over after Sunsoft with Batman Returns and stuff like that. But again, really great game. I love those really tight, good, great feeling wall jumps that Batman does.
That's so great.
Yeah, it feels really good. So, Chris, is there anything you want to cover in terms of maybe, I mean, we only covered four games, but any other big standouts from your book that maybe are your most interesting or strangest, you know, things that you wrote about?
Oh, in all or NES?
Like maybe what's one or two of your favorites? We might want to stick to 8-bit, but if it goes beyond that, that's fine.
Keep there's not that many more actual NES games. I think an interesting one, it's a terrible game as well, is Swamp Thing.
Whoa.
Yes.
He's amazing.
So before you start about off on this, I want to say that I believe there is a Bartman game that is using Swamp Thing parts. Is that correct?
Oh, there is a character called Swamp Hag in
right.
the game.
Okay.
I think
I've read what you're talking about like, since the time.
The
yeah.
third Bartman game is a Swamp Thing game in disguise. I don't know. I'm just pulling this out of my ass, but I'm pretty sure it's true.
Well, I think the third Bart game is the Bartman game, which you could call a superhero game, and to me that one is kind of interesting because there's literally no sense of humor in that game at all.
No. And it's a very bad game made by Australians, I think it's like Imagineer or something, but yeah, it's like no jokes, it's just pure like dire platforming.
There's certainly room for jokes, you know, he has Radioactive Man, he's like teaming up with Radioactive Man, but every line is like, let's go get that bad guy. It's like, it's nothing.
Classic Simpsons.
There's not even an attempt at humor.
Yeah, there was only one Bartman game, I'm pretty sure, for the NES. Yeah.
Was the Swamp Thing game based on the animated series?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Okay. Oh,
Swamp Thing is amazing.
A lot of people probably have never heard of the Swamp Thing cartoon, which aired all of five episodes in, I think it was 1990, might have been 91.
And they got two toy lines out of it, yeah.
And they got this game, which came out like in 1992, well after. They probably started development of the game after the show was already off the air. Because, you know, the game is just a basic, you know, side-scrolling punch and, you know, kick kind of thing. But yeah, just the fact that it's based on this cartoon that nobody saw, and there's a Game Boy version as well. The Game Boy, I think, is pretty funny because you never are in a swamp the entire game. It's like the cliche. It's got the desert level and the I think there's an ice level and a jungle, maybe a jungle level. I think that's probably the closest thing to a swamp.
And all the while, it has an inexplicably popular USA show. In two movies.
Oh, yeah, the live action show. That's right.
I actually assumed when I played this game the first time that it was based on the USA show. It's not. It's based on the terrible. Everyone should look this up on YouTube. Look up the cartoon's just theme song.
Yep. Yes. That was a very deliberate reference.
I will put it in this episode right now.
I know this for a fact. It is all on Hulu.
Yes. I will put the song in here right now. So that was pretty amazing. Just like Swamp Thing.
You know what's interesting too, though? I think that's only in the first two episodes where it has that song. And then, like, they probably got a cease and desist.
You are not Weird Al, sirs. Please turn this off.
Chris Baker, you're doing the Lord's work by having all this information.
This is amazing, Chris. Any other highlights before we go? I mean, I thought this was going to be a micro, but I think it's going to be a full episode. We've been talking for an hour about these games, and I have so much music to put in here because all of the, like, well, not Superman, of course.
This is all the stuff that Chris will tell you on air. Like, you are a treasure trove of anecdotes regarding these games.
It's a very, peculiar part inside of me, but you know, really, I came to appreciate comic book heroes largely because of video games and TV shows, and comic books were eventually there for me. You know, it was like I got an idea of who the characters and their enemies were by playing through not the greatest video games, but at the time, a video game was good no matter what it was, unless it was Uncanny X-Men.
That's the one exception.
Yes.
The thing, my love of comic books came at just the same time as video games were doing great. And like, especially for Spider-Man, I got into Spider-Man on his 30th anniversary in 1992, and that's when he was having all these great comics, and I could go back to read his just recent Todd McFarlane and Eric Larson run. But the exact same time, Spider-Man was in a video game renaissance because Sega had signed a deal with Marvel to make a bunch of Spider-Man
games.
Yeah. The amazing arcade game and the OK Genesis game. Mm-hmm. That's how comic books and video games were always hand in hand.
I got into comics through alternate mediums. That is mm-hmm. how it happened. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, because I was reading like Archie and stuff, but not superhero stuff until the cartoons. Marvel cards were a huge deal.
Yeah,
we did a whole video series on the Laser Time YouTube channel about that.
I started with Image Comics before I graduated in scare quotes to manga. But so I guess the only classic comic book game I really played was the SNES Spawn, which I guess was okay.
Wow.
It existed.
I can't imagine.
That's the best I can say about it. And I played all these games too, but again, I with America Comics, I started with Image and then I just kind of stopped and read manga much later in life. But yeah, I mean, this is a great conversation. All these games are at least worth experiencing. Maybe not the Uncanny X-Men. Superman should be experienced just for the pure, just like W2F factor, I think we should call it, in terms of just pure, like, what is even happening in this game? This is not Superman.
But, check out the Laser Time guys playing it.
Yes.
Yeah,
and speaking of Laser Time, your theme, I'm not sure how many people actually know this.
That's right. That's
the
right.
Theme.
No, don't say
comes
it.
From...
Yeah, no, go ahead. And somebody made a cool comic about it.
And yeah,
it's,
exactly.
It's from the Silver Surfer
yes,
game.
Yes, their theme comes from the Silver Surfer game.
One of the hardest games.
Yes.
That's a really hard
if
game.
If it weren't so hard, it might actually be good.
Yeah, everything else about it is appealing.
It just smashes your fingers with a hammer from second one. But again, great. Is it Tim Fallon?
Yeah,
the great Tim Fallon. Mm-hmm. Like no matter what that guy does, he's mm-hmm. giving it his all. Mm-hmm. And same with Rare as well. Like,
and it's so weird to me. Like Silver Surfer is a striking character, but every other character they got to pull from in that is like nobody's heard of them. Like,
yeah,
no, they're not mainstream even slightly.
And I'm sure there was a Silver Surfer cartoon. There had to be like on
for
Fox.
A second,
for
yeah.
one season.
It didn't have anything to do with this game though.
Yeah,
no, the cartoon was like 96.
Yeah, that was a few
first
years
episode's
later.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
But kids hated it because it was as philosophical and introspective as a Silver Surfer
it's
comic.
It's a 70s movie.
Is he like posed like the thinker in space thinking about existential dilemmas?
They're weird aliens, and eventually his entire planet dies and he becomes the Silver Surfer.
Yeah,
but he took up surfing at least, so he's doing okay.
Classic surfer books are basically like Star Trek meets Jesus. Like he's, because Silver Surfer was made to be a messianic figure, and he is the most powerful.
Who can also
thing.
Hang tan, bro?
Catch some gnarly waves.
He's barely ever challenged by on power level, so it's just all these like moral conundrums or him, and then like pages of him just philosophizing like is this
air.
What life is about or could it be another thing? I do not know.
So really quick, I wanted to go over each of us to choose what our favorite classic superhero game is. I already said mine was The Adventures of Batman and Robin for the SNES. Mm. Every level is like a different episode with its own theme, its own villain, its own sort of like weird mechanics. I've gone back to it. I love it. It looks great. It's by Konami. Great, great music too. You can't buy it anywhere. You can't play it anywhere, so you kind of have to steal it. But it's such a great SNES game. Chris, how about you? What is your favorite classic game? It could be one that we've even talked about.
Yeah, well...
We can go like sub PS1, maybe. Maybe it's PS1 and lower.
I think the comic book game that had the biggest influence on me liking things in comic books was X-Men by Konami, the arcade game.
Oh, yeah, that's a great choice.
Which, you know... also represents its characters very terribly.
Welcome to die.
Welcome to die. There's,
nothing stops the blob.
There's just
nothing
like Colossus going.
There's a 6-hour YouTube video of just that.
Yeah,
and I love it.
I don't doubt it.
In the comics, Colossus changing into metal form is not an AOE attack.
Because what that did, actually, you know, I mentioned earlier that I got really into X-Men through the cartoon, but this game came out the summer before that cartoon started. And I played through it one day at the mall, and that, like, got me in that mode. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'd heard of X-Men, I heard they sold a lot of comics, and that they were cool, but that was my first real experience with them.
The double cabinet.
Even today, that cabinet is a sight to behold. Yeah. Like, wow, I can actually play with this thing? It's a beast.
Like, mega widescreen, two televisions and six controllers.
And a mirror thrown in there, because two TVs can't sit next to each other.
Yeah, and when I remember playing it on machines where one TV was worse than the other one.
Oh, so yeah, that always happens. Yeah.
Mr. Baker stole mine, but I think also the arcade Spider-Man game. I really
never played it.
I loved when
made that one, Henry?
It was Sega. Oh, okay. Sega, yeah. And it was just called Spider-Man. And it has very random, like, licensing-wise, they got all the Spider-Man villains, but it has to be a four-player co-op because it's an arcade game. Mm-hmm. And so the co-op is Black Cat, who is a Spider-Man character, Namor, and Hawkeye are the other three. And when neither Namor nor Hawkeye were cool at all. But the coolest thing about it, well, as a kid, my favorite thing was the sprites were huge. Like, they were super tall and colorful, and it looked like a comic come to life. And there was spoken dialogue, and when they would say lines, there would be word balloons on the screen. Mm-hmm. But also, it had a neat mix that occasionally you would get to a stage where the camera would just zoom out, and it would become more of like a regular platformer, and you'd explain, like, Spider-Man could walk on walls, and that's how you'd fought, like, Doc Ock in that stage would be in the zoomed out stage, and then when you'd finish that portion, zoom back in.
I've never played this game. It sounds great.
It is pretty good.
Yeah, I've always wanted to.
I gotta emulate.
I mean,
this.
It is an arcade game. So when you don't have quarters in the way, you will be done in 40 minutes. Yeah,
that sounds fun. I like that.
That is good.
Yeah, Chris, how about you? Favorite classic superhero game?
NES stuff, definitely Batman Sunsoft. Mm. I, for some reason, have fond memories of playing that at my grandparents' house because I brought it with. The TMNT 2, it's the first and only thing I've ever put on layaway at Walmart in my life because my parents wouldn't buy it for me.
You mean the arcade game for NES?
No, the arcade game.
Did you use your Pizza Hut cut?
Totally. Totally, man.
So you redeemed it before December 31st, 1991. Okay, thank God.
Nothing was better as a kid than getting your own personal pan Pizza Hut pizza.
That Pizza Hut, the kids' night where you ate free, my parents were cheap bastards, and I went to that every Tuesday. The only time we went out to eat. But
it's where you took your book it, too.
I want to believe Pizza Hut pizza was better. It's not just my taste buds maturing. I want to believe it was a good pizza at some point.
I ordered it once. A few years ago, they send me a coupon now constantly, so I continue to order it like once or twice a year. It is the greasiest thing you'll ever eat,
man,
and it is nostalgic.
Right,
you have to get your own pitcher of Coke.
Yeah,
that you have to bring that yourself when you get it delivered. But the game, Captain America and the Avengers by Data East is, I don't know. I fell in love with that game. It introduced me to Iron Man. And made, like, he's my guy. I'm going to like Iron Man from now on. I'm going to go and read all these Iron Man comics. And it is weird now that he, due to whatever happened with the MCU, he is Marvel's guy. He's Marvel's Mickey Mouse in terms of the cinematic universe. It's all based around Iron Man.
They pay his actor the most. I know that much.
They do, but it started with him. He's the central figure, lacking a Spider-Man and Wolverine.
Prior to 2008, I never thought Iron Man would be more than a B-level hero. Like, I always enjoyed Iron Man comics, but I was like, he's not that popular. He's not like Spider-Man. No way.
I remember selling a figure of him at GameStop when I worked there. And it's like, who is this dork with this stupid mustache? Like, why would you buy this character? Little did I know, in 10 years, he would be the most popular movie figure ever.
Yeah, he's a hammered slut with proton powers. It's beautiful. Like, and he's like...
He's a himbo.
Anything you can, like, project on Batman of yourself is, like, it's embodied in Tony Stark. He's just a dude.
He's Batman without the tortured past, correct? He likes to have fun with his money.
He has some tortured past, but he drinks away those pain.
So yes, that was our 8-bit superhero sampler is what I'm calling it. And you can find us on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, and all kinds of stuff, including YouTube as Retronauts. And we are funded by Patreon completely. Everything we do is brought to you by you generous Patreon donors. So thank you so much. We could not make the show without you. Every penny that you give us goes into the show. We take nothing except to make the show, buy equipment to make the show, and sometimes feed our guests, not all the time. But this time I'm in the bedroom studio at Laser Time. So thanks so much to Chris for letting me take over briefly after talking Simpsons to just do this. And thanks so much for Chris for coming in, because your knowledge is invaluable and your book is great. Yeah. And
NES box art style cover. Yes.
Wrong retro games. You messed up our comic book heroes.
What is is that McNeil error with the SNL sketch?
Yes, that's kind of
Wharton Kondraki.
That definitely, actually the Dana Carvey version of that,
exactly.
I would say, inspired.
Egg and banana.
whenever I open that in my Kindle, I think of that sketch. So you succeeded. So you can find me, contact info wise, you can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo, and you can find my writing on somethingawful.com and usgamer.net. I should say that every Monday, a post goes up on usgamer.net that goes over all we talk about in the episode. We often list what music we use and links to things we talk about. I'll have a link to Chris's book so you can buy it. So please go to usgamer.net, if only to support me and Jeremy and everything that we do. I'll let Chris go first. Chris, where can we find you, and what do you do? And like, let's know all about you.
Well, you can know all about me probably easiest by going to my personal website, which is most easily accessed through cbake.com, c-bake.com.
Mm.
Or you can follow me on Twitter at cbake76. And if you just go to that Twitter page, it has all the necessary links to find out more about me.
Cool, yes, and we will
if
have a
you're
link.
Really that interested in me.
We will have a link to your book on the Retronauts blog and usgamer.net. Henry, how about you? Where can we find you?
H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter. You can keep up with all my wonderful political retweets, and sometimes I talk about games too. And I'm also senior games editor at fandom.wikia.com, the editorial arm of the Wikia Empire. But also I work at the LaserTime family of podcasts, most often on the Talking Simpsons podcast with Bob and Chris.
Oh, thank you.
Though also, if you like comic books, I don't do it regularly anymore, but there are about 200 episodes of Cape Crisis, my comic book podcast, you can rediscover now and re-download and listen to.
We did bring up on a show, what was it about? It was about Development Hell, and we talked about Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, which I am so, I feel so fortunate that I paid to see that.
I want to say, speaking of Batman, the Batman musical episode, Henry, is definitely a must-listen.
They're all Meatloaf great. Songs.
Yeah.
They're all Meatloaf songs. It's great.
In the Land of the Pig, the Butcher is King. That's all I know. It echoes throughout my head every day now.
And if I could plug, obviously, LaserTime Podcast. 302010 is also lovely, Talking Simpsons, but we've streamed a ton of this on our YouTube channel. I know a lot of people like it. We go through these old Marvel and DC arcade games, but I am very proud of the video I worked on with our buddy Josh, our designer on the site, Stupid Things Superman Does in Games. Like, nobody's watched it. But I love it.
Everyone should watch it.
I love it. Very good. Your book helped out tremendously.
There has
with that.
Never been a good Superman game ever.
I call it, like, Superman's biggest arch villain is just video games. They have done the worst things.
I thought
him
it was
ever.
Floating rings.
Also video games. And that's not even the worst. It gets so much worse than that. But yeah, that's on our YouTube channel. I should have something talking about those Disney ports with as much knowledge as I can provide to you if you really care about old games.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for joining us for what turned out to be a full length episode, which is great. And we'll be back next week with a mini episode. So see you then. Bye.